Welcome to episode 299 of the Women of the Military podcast. This week, my guest is Dr. Darlene Williams-Pradas. She joined the Air Force looking for community after her parents died, but she also learned how to be a leader in the military. After her parents died, she was on her own, and her dad had served in the Army, and so she decided to look at the military community. She ended up deciding to join the Air Force, and at basic training, she was selected to lead the flight, and it allowed her to see the potential she had to be a leader. She is an award-winning author, relationship coach, reverend, and more. And I really think this episode shares so much insight and wisdom in what being in the military is like, how it shapes your future, and how you can continue to give back throughout your life. And so I'm really excited to share her story. And before we get started, I want to remind you that Women of the Military podcast is available on Wreaths Across America Radio on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. And you can listen on iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, or Odyssey. Now with that out of the way, let's get started with this week's interview. Welcome everyone to another episode of Women of the Military podcast. I'm really excited to have Darlene here. We got to chat a little bit before the interview started, so I know that she has so much knowledge and so much information, and you guys stay tuned so you can hear all of it. But we always start with, why did you decide to join the military? So Darlene, can you share that with us?
I joined the military for two reasons. Number one, my dad served in the Army, and so did his friends, and they hung out on our porch quite a bit. Number two, I lost both of my parents at an early age, and I was an only child. So it became just me, and part of being in the military is that camaraderie and that family that you feel no matter where you are, no matter what country, what city, what town, what state. And I knew I needed that because I didn't have the normal family, like aunts, uncles, cousins. I didn't have all of that because my parents were only children. They were only children. And so both sets of their parents were already deceased, which left me by myself.
Yeah, that sounds really, really challenging. How old were you when your parents passed away?
16.
Oh, wow. So what did your life go? You went from being like in a home with parents and then like no one because your grandparents were gone. Your parents were gone.
Yeah, grandparents were gone. I lost one set at 9, one set at 11. So they were already gone. I was actually already in my first year of college because I graduated high school at 16, went on to university, and I was in my first year of college, lost my mom. I was trying to go back and say, okay, well, I've got another 3 years. I can stick this out because my dad's here. And then when I lost him, it was like, okay, this is not working. I'll try something different. And the different was I should go to the military. I mean, he was always talking about the camaraderie and how close they were. And he came back with a lot of guys and they remained friends. They remained, you know, buddies where they'd go shoot pool or they go drink scotch or they smoke cigars, but they always were happy and thankful just to be back from the war, able to talk about it and share with people things that you don't see on TV, you don't hear on television, and let you know that as long as you've got a village, a community that is sticking close to you, going, reminding you, you've got somebody at home waiting for you, it makes a lot of sense. And so I was like, okay, let me see what that is. I started out in Army ROTC, and I liked Army ROTC. Problem was, they didn't take girls in the infantry at that time. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to be in infantry. I was like, I want to be like my dad. I want to be in infantry. And they were like, no, but we can let you do. And they gave me this whole list, and I was like, mm-mm, I don't want to do any of that. So I said, let me go over here and talk to this other recruiter. I talked to an Air Force recruiter, and he said, well, why not communications? Because my major in college was literally journalism. And I thought, yeah, that fits. That fits perfectly. And I went on to do that.
So initially you were in college and you learned about Army ROTC, and so you tried that out. But then when you found out you couldn't do infantry, you were like, let's find something else. And so you ended up with an Air Force recruiter who saw your degree was communications and got you into the public affairs community or career field?
Actually, he got me into more of the communication fields where I was literally working with lots of rules, regulations, things. Yeah, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, but that's okay. Because in that, in learning about the rules and regulations, I was literally a part of a team who we sat with binders, probably about, I don't know, 400 or 500 pages thick. And you go through each page and some general, some colonel is going to say, no, delete this and put that, delete this and put that. And your handwriting, you're lining through in your handwriting. And then you send this book back to whence it came. Because at that time they had the type, you know, it was a typewriter where they had the little roll ribbons. That person had the bigger problem. I felt like I had a great job. I'm just reading. I'm looking at what he says, change. This is a change. This is a delete. This doesn't go here. This is amendment. And I just put in the changes by hand. And then I make sure that that huge binder gets to the correct person who is going to now retype this whole thing up to make sure that all of these changes and corrections and amendments are there. I also worked with from Hickam Air Force Base. I worked with all the bases on the island to manage correspondence, manage parts, work with recreation. So we had a whole lot of moving parts.
So it wasn't quite exactly what sometimes that happens. It's like, don't you want to do this? And you're like, yes. And then you're like, wait, this is not what you said. But it does sound like it was related, just not quite exactly what you were expecting.
Not quite.
So how quickly after you talked to the Air Force recruiter did you go to basic training?
I talked to the recruiter in, I want to say, November. And 2 days before my birthday in January, I was sitting in basic training.
So it wasn't that long, but
nope.
A few months. So what was basic training like?
For me, basic training was, there were 61 women that I did not know. And you're looking at someone who is more of an introvert than an extrovert. So I played violin, viola, cello, piano, and I sang. And those were my exteriors. Not only that, I ran cross country. So those were my ways to get rid of, you know, stuff exteriorly. But as so far as, okay, I'm just going to hang around a bunch of people, that really was my thing. With that many women, the one thing that stuck out to everybody is when it was me on call, I got nothing. When it was time to make phone calls, I had nobody to call. And so the sergeant there says, you're going to lead these 61 women. And I thought to myself, no, I'm not interested in that because I don't. This one's from Chicago. That one's from Ohio. This one's from New York. And I'm from Louisiana. So I have a totally different attitude. It's like real calm, collected. Hey, y'all, how you doing? And literally that's how I walked in. Hey, y'all, how y'all doing? And everybody's giving me this look like, what is she saying? And where did she come from? As you can see, I no longer have that. I never got jumped. If you're thinking that in your head, no. What happened was he assigned me to do a job, and that began a career of leadership for me where, okay, these are the rules and this is how we got to make it happen. One of the things that I remember quoting myself is saying, we're going to get honor flight. We're going to beat those guys over there. Literally, there were guys. I think nobody had that thought because we had a couple of people who were on the what they call chunky chicken program, and they were overweight. Right. And so we're doing this obstacle course and I'm screaming behind this young lady, come on, Beeson, we can do it. And in my head, I'm going, I've already went over this wall twice. What are you talking about? But I need you to go over this wall, because if you don't, we're all going to have to do this again. And I didn't want her to get recycled because that was one of the things. OK, you can't do it now. We're going to send you back and you're going to do this all over again, not just the course, but the whole basic training. And I thought, how horrible could that be? And how much does it take your self-esteem down that you, it's like repeating second grade. Come on. It's like repeating second grade. And I told the ladies, like, we're a team. If one falls, we all fall. And they thought, okay. I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this obstacle course again with her. So we did do the course again with her. They allowed us to do that. And then when we got ready to do our run, it was everybody watch the white t-shirt in front of you, listen to the cadence that are coming in my mouth, and just listen to the feet. And when I started calling cadence and they started running, they were listening to the feet. We all had on white t-shirts and we did get honor flight. I still have the shirt that says 3711 honor flight. So when I have that, I look at that shirt and I go, I know how to be a leader, not because I was forced, because it was already here.
I love that story. And I love that the sergeant like saw something in you that you didn't even know was inside you. He was like, you're going to be in charge. And you're like, no, I'm not. And then you showed like so many great aspects of leadership of, you know, helping the weakest member and making sure like one fails, we all fail. And like just having that, you know, camaraderie and group experience of, and setting a goal that nobody probably even thought about. You're like, we're going to be honor flight. And you did it. That's so cool. I love hearing that story. That's so awesome.
Well, here's the thing. When you're even in life, you're never really by yourself unless you choose to be. It's a choice. You make the choice to interact or not interact. It's just like this podcast. If I've decided, oh no, I don't want to do the podcast because I'm afraid of what people think. Okay, well, that's a thing in me. That's not a thing in the audience, right? So when you're not feeling confident in self, you're not going to exude that confidence. Now, even a shy person can exude confidence. I have a major. I know her very well. And she had no intention of ever being a major or being a leader. But the encouragement of, it's already there. You don't have to look for it. It's already there. But then the question becomes, what kind of leader do you choose to be? Are you going to be the kind of leader who can lead from the front, lead from the back, lead from the middle, lead from the side? So you're the whole box? Or are you just going to be the guy that screams from the front? Because for me, it's about allowing the people around me to make the proper choices. Okay, I'm going to give you all of the, well, what's the metaphor I use with little kids? I'll give you all of the candy, but you've got to choose which one you want. And that's the same thing with adults. I'll give you all of this, but you've got to choose which one you want. I realize that being a leader, sometimes you have to modulate how that comes out because everybody doesn't take it the same way. Some people are more sensitive than others. So where I had someone screaming at me during basic training, which I wasn't accustomed to at all because in our house we didn't do screaming, but I became adjusted to lowering the volume in my head, not telling, can't tell him to lower the volume. So lower the volume in your head, right? You take it, basic training, and I tell people this who've never been in the military, because they always think it's something else. They watch TV and they think it's something else. It's mostly mental. Then it becomes emotional. And the physical just happens. I was a track star, a tennis player, basketball player, all before I ever got to basic training. So the physical wasn't an issue. But I lived in a household where my parents did not yell and scream and use cuss words and push each other around. They sat down, and I say this to anybody, my parents sat down like diplomats. Somebody had tea and something, somebody had scotch and something, and now they're talking. And they never talked over each other. He would say, would you like to go first? And she said, no, be my guest. And she would listen to everything he had to say. And she'd listen not just to hear him say it, but to understand from his perspective what things looked like. And then she would repeat back to him, so you're saying X, Y, Z, A, B, C. Now he's either going to confirm or deny. If he denies, then she'll say, well, can you explain that a little bit deeper? Can you expound on that? That's a conversation. That's not an argument. And he did the same for her. When you have a conversation with anybody, whether it's your partner, your friend, your kids, if there's no yelling and screaming, that shows a level of respect, but also a level of empathy and restraint that needs to be exhibited if you're going to go past that situation, bring closure to that, and move on.
So much great wisdom. And I mean, it's amazing how much you can learn from the military and how it brings that out of you, and like all the leadership training and everything combined. It just really helps you. My husband just got put in a leadership role for Cub Scouts, and it's been really interesting because people were like, he needs to be in charge, he's a leader. And we have noticed that they weren't doing things that they should have done, but it's because people aren't trained the way the military trains you, like, do this, document this, do this. And so it's been interesting to be like, and I told him, like, you need to tell him, like, hey, I'm in the military, so I'm going to do things the military way. And if you guys don't like it, let me know and we can adjust. But like, these are the things that need to be in place that aren't there, but also still being open to hearing like what people say, not just like, we're doing it this way, this is like the highway or my way. It's no, it's give us input, but this is why I'm doing it, and being open, because the military has an huge impact on your life. And they noticed that he was a leader, and that's why they asked him to do this. But it also comes with, okay, you noticed he was a leader, but this is how he was trained to be a leader. And so it's been really interesting last few weeks with him taking on this new role.
So how are the kids that he's leading?
Well, we're dealing with, the Cub Scouts are anyone under fifth grade, so kindergarten to fifth grade, but there's a lot of parent involvement. And so it's the parents aspect of, you know, the den leaders who are, he's the cub master, and then there's den leader. So I'm a den leader now because he got promoted. So then they needed someone to fill in. And so the den leaders work directly with the kids. He's more managing the adults and helping to make sure all that stuff. No, he's not telling the kids. No, he's telling the parents. So no, but it's been really fun. And it's been a learning experience for me as well. So it's been really interesting just to hang out with civilians, because most of the leadership opportunities have been with military people. And so it's totally different when you're with people who haven't been in the military.
And it is. I mean, I'm fortunate enough that my dad was in the Army. And that kind of gave me breadcrumbs of how this was going to work. But I also realized that as the military evolves, things change. My younger son was in the Army and his wife was in the National Guard. My older son is in the Air Force and his wife in the Air Force. And he's actually about to retire. So, yeah, he's about to retire. So, and every time I talk, it's different changes that have taken place from the 80s when I was in to now. There are a lot of changes, a lot of things that are different. A lot of things now that probably took place when we were both in the military, but now they're being exposed.
It's been a lot of change. Even since I got out, which is 2013, there's so many things that have changed. And this new generation is demanding that change. And the military is struggling to meet their recruitment goals, so they have to change to continue to recruit people. And so it's been an interesting dynamic to watch that aspect of it, for sure.
So you were in what, the Army?
I was in the Air Force.
Go blue. go blue. And not the, hey, I got on both sides, the Army and the Air Force. So I'm National Guard. I'm not a problem. Friends who are Marines, Navy, I've got the whole gambit. And still, you know, it's okay. When I do mediations and things, I'm always working with Coast Guards. I'm like, okay, we're all one big happy family. We may not be happy all the time, but we're happy 90% of the time. That works for me.
No, I've had the opportunity to talk to people from all the branches except for the Space Force. My husband's in the Space Force, but it's a little bit more complicated to find Space Force people because a lot of the work they do is not something they can talk about. And because it's such a new branch, there's not very many veterans. So, yeah.
I understand. I actually have a coworker, and her son was given the choice. Hey, you want to go to Space Force or you want to go to Air Force? And at first he thought Space Force, Space Force. And then he looked at all the stuff that went with it. He goes, Air Force, Air Force. And he literally just graduated this weekend. So from the, from Air Force basic training, and he's on his way to tech school. So it's going to be fun just kind of watching how that evolves and see what comes next.
Yeah, someone was telling me, like, doesn't everyone on the Space Force know each other? And I was like, maybe in, like, 10 years. But right now we all, like, transferred in. So, you know, like, a lot of the lieutenants go to an Air and Space basic course. And so you meet a bunch of lieutenants from the Air Force. But they create that for lieutenants for the Space Force. There's so few people. They'll all get to know each other. But now it's like nobody really knows each other because we all came from all over.
But you will. They will. I believe that it's going to evolve into a bigger community where people are going to know each other. And that's just how it's going to be.
But it just takes time, like everything. But let's get back to your story. We only made it to basic training and it's been 20 minutes. So it sounds like you went to Hawaii. Is that where you went first or is that a later assignment?
Well, the first place they sent me was Biloxi, Mississippi. So I went to Keesler Air Force Base first and then Hawaii. And there was nothing wrong with Keesler. Keesler was close to Louisiana. I'm from Louisiana, so it was close to home. I could drive to New Orleans in little or no time and go eat or just go hang out. But then when I got, I really, really wanted Hickam. And it was amazing. I remember being in the dorms and I had a roommate who was an air traffic controller and she was like, did you get your orders yet? And I was like, no, I didn't get my orders yet. She goes, well, where do you think you're going? I said, I'm going to Hickam. And she said, you said that with like a perfectly clear face. And I said, yeah, because I am. She goes, you do know you don't get to choose where you go. They send you. I said, that's fine, but I'm going to Hickam. I'll send you a postcard, pineapples, coconuts, whatever they got over there. I'll send you one. And she laughed. I'll never forget. She laughed and she says, I'm going to take a shower. And because, you know, she was going, she was headed out. I was like, okay. So she went to take her shower and I was already getting dressed. And I was saying to myself, I'm going to Hickam Air Force Base right after this one. That's what they're going to do. They're going to give me orders and I'm going to go. And when I got my orders, literally, I was shocked because I was like, ooh, I got Hickam. I've got Hickam. And it was amazing to me just the whole get there. We got off the plane. They put Lays on our necks and that smells so good. And I'm like, I'm here at my dream base and enjoyed every minute of it. Every minute.
That's awesome. I love your confidence. You're like, nope, that's where I'm going. And then you're like, what? I got it. It's so funny.
Understand, being from Louisiana, the one thing that was instilled in me was faith. If you don't have faith, what really do you have? You can't have, you know, you can't hold on something that you can see because things like that disappear. But why not try holding on to something you can't see? And so God was something I held on to. Even after losing my parents, I thought, you know what? I can't see the air, but I'm breathing. You know, I can feel the sun. But I'm not really seeing the sun because the sun is like way, way up there. I can see the moon, but it's way, way up there. I said, I can hear things that I don't see. Like there's birds, but you can't, you know, you're walking past something, you know, the bird's there. They're fine. You hear the crickets and there's all this other stuff going on. Like when you're in science class, they're telling you about neurons and atoms and all of these things you can't see. But you believe they're there, right? You believe that they're there. So I believe strong enough that I'm going to go to Hickam. And when you put that energy out there, something has to happen.
So true. That is so true. What did you do after Hawaii or Hickam?
After Hickam was, Dyess Air Force Base, because I went, then I was married, and that was his next station. So we went to Dyess. We went to Texas. And we left there and we went to Tinker. And I thought, ooh, ow. And then it was Elmendorf. And I was like, yay. And I never thought, being from Louisiana, I would love snow. But I absolutely loved, loved, loved it. I was like, okay, this is perfect for me. I can handle this. And a lot of people are like, oh my God, is it dark 6 months out of the year? No, I was in Anchorage. It was not dark 6 months out of the year. I enjoyed the staying of the sun for so long because it allowed my family to do a lot of things that normally in the States you wouldn't do. It's nighttime. You know, if it's 8 o'clock at night, it's dark. But 8 o'clock at night there during the summer, it's like 8 a.m. in the morning. And you can, but you just have to be mindful. Okay, it's nighttime. The animals that are usually asleep are now out. You know what I mean? Those nocturnal friends are running around because they think that you guys are in the house asleep. But we went with our neighbors. We had a whole neighborhood that went camping and we went hiking and we did all these things together. And it was fun. It was fun to do.
Wow. So how long did you stay in the Air Force? Did you do a full 20 years?
Oh, no, 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 no. I got out. I did at least 4.5 years. I got out and I became one of the things that I really wanted to be, which was a singer. And I sang and I performed all over the United States and was with a band. I actually performed in the military as well. And I just lived my life. I I enjoyed doing things that involved music. And I was a mom and I was a wife and those things were good for me.
That's awesome. So did you get out of the military when you left Hawaii and then went to Texas, or was it while you were in Texas?
No, I got out of the military in Hawaii and then traveled with my husband wherever he went.
And it sounds like you guys got to go all over.
We got to go all over, but it also allowed me to come back to the grounding of music. It allowed me to come back to the grounding of writing. I wrote several pieces of poetry, which were placed in multiple anthologies, received a presidential award, in fact, 2 presidential awards for my poetry. And, you know, I just kept going. I wrote a couple of scripts, finished up college 3 or 4 different times. And got several degrees and I thought, okay. And once I got to California, we decided, okay, this is where we're gonna be for a while. I decided to earn a degree in psychology because what I wanted to do was work with military veterans who were coming back from wars and their families, because when you come back, you're not the same as when you went. And I figured that out and I decided that's something I wanted to do. I wanted to work with families. I wanted to work with couples, but I definitely wanted to work with veterans because I recognize we're this group of people that everybody thinks the VA takes care of us. And I was like, that's not how that works. There's so many of us that the VA is inundated and we need to be able to have outside sources that goes, we're really going to take care of you. But if it's a military veteran, they understand better than someone who's never served in the military. When I was diagnosed with PTSD, it took them 5 years. They couldn't figure it out. Why are you stressed out about this? Why does this give you anxiety? Blah, 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 blah. And then they finally figured out, oh, it's this. But why did it take you so long? But see, that was going through the VA. That wasn't coming to the outside. When I went to an outside source, it took her three months. And she was like, okay, so this is what's going on with you. And this is why that's going on with you. And it has to do with all of this stuff that comes right here at your door. And it's always going to be at your door. Here are the coping mechanisms. Now, the VA tried to give me acupuncture in my fingers. Yeah, they had acupuncture in my fingers, acupuncture in my ears. And I thought, okay, you're causing me pain. You're causing me pain. That's not getting rid of the issue. You're doing something else. And I finally went to an actual acupuncturist and I'm telling him where the pain is. And they're saying, okay, your shoulders, your back, this is all stress and it's all lodged right here. It goes straight down this. Here's how and I've never been afraid of acupuncture needles, which is strange. But when a phlebotomist comes to take my blood, I have, we're not friends. We're not friends. But yeah, I go in the VA and I have to give them blood and it's like, gotta think about you. How long have you been doing this? Oh, you're just training. Oh, I'm not going to be the pincushion today. I'm sorry. That's okay. And even my husband laughs. He goes, how is it that you can get needles in your ears and down your neck and down your back and on your ankles and you go to sleep? But when someone comes to take blood, you're like, mm-mm. I said, it's the thought that I know that the person who has been doing this for me for years, I can trust him to do what he does. And he knows, okay, what she needs is to relax. So we're going to do this, this, this. And then I'm going to go away for 45 minutes to an hour. I'm going to come back. I'm going to take all the needles out. His voice is very, very calm. It's not, okay, well, let me slam this thing on your arm and come on, pump your hand up and let me take. I said, it's a rush thing. I said, he recognizes if you rush me, I'm not going to do what you want. I said, and kind of imagine having a very large German Shepherd and you want to walk them and they want to sit. They're not going to move. They're just going to sit.
Well, and the VA is just trying to get people in and out, so they're not going to take time to, because like you said, there's so many people, you know, there's so many people. I had an appointment that got canceled and then was moved back 2 months. And then I had another appointment and it just got canceled and got moved back another month. And I'm like, and the VA is just like, sorry. And I'm like, okay. So you're right. Like, they can't keep up with the demand. They don't have enough people to take care of the veterans, and it's just really hard. And so I'm a little annoyed, but I'm also, it's not a life, it's just my annual appointment that just keeps getting, but I gave my blood, because I gave my blood and I'm like, I'm not doing that again.
So you got it, you better use that dose you got.
Yeah, I was like, you better not get rid of that.
And then the other thing about the VA is not like, I'm in North Carolina. And so there's a chain of hospitals, they're all connected. So I don't have to, every time I go somewhere, give them my records. And they're click, you know, they hit, oh, you're in here. This is your social. It's been my social my whole life. All you got, you should be able to click it and go, she's in San Francisco. This is what they did in San Francisco. Okay, she's in Maryland. This is what they, but no, it's, well, no, we're not connected. Why? You're all the Veterans Administration. So if she goes into a cardiac arrest in El Paso, you should be able to say, we can't give her this medication because you've seen her entire file. I said, from the time I left the military, the time I entered the military, you should have everything on me from inception to death. That's how that should be. I said, because every state in the union, that's how all of their hospitals are, unless they're clinics. But if they're hospitals, they're connected. They can see each other's record.
Yeah, I went to a conference for women veterans in Vegas, and they were like, we are giving flu shots, but we can only log in on our system. Here's this piece of paper that shows that you got your flu shot. Take it to your VA clinic, because they don't talk to each other. So you're right. They do need to make changes. But I don't want to run out of time, because we talked about your military experience, but we talked about your singing and a little bit about your poetry, but that's like, there's so much more. So let's talk more about like what's going on right now, because you have a lot going on right now, and any other information that you want to share.
Well, I am currently and have been for the past 30 years a certified mediator. I started with the EEOC in San Diego, California. And from there, I became a life coach. And then I dwindle it down to something specialized, which is a couples relationship coach and a family coach. What I want to do, the goal is very simple. People bring things into relationships that don't belong. The relationships are broken before they ever get started. I am also a reverend, and I marry people, or I officiate weddings. I don't really marry them. I officiate the wedding that joins them together. But before I do that, I take them through a course where they understand each other better. And that relationship course is called a reunion course, where it reunifies them. When you're living with somebody, you think you know them, but when you marry them, somehow they change, and some people don't, but they do. So I work with relationships. I'm a relationships coach. I'm a certified mediator. I'm also a public speaker. I just spoke at the leadership tour, and I actually spoke this weekend, but the leadership tour is at the University of Michigan, where I spoke about how to build quick relationships that last. And the reason why we always are building relationships, whether we think we are or not. And I gave the example, when you walk into your local grocery store, you're talking to that cashier. You're building a relationship. It's not long-term, but the relationship and the impression you want to leave on that person is, if I come back to this store and this person is here, they have a fond memory of me, not the memory, oh my God, here comes the customer from HE Double Hockey Stick. Can I call for relief or backup plan? You know, so, and I let them know a story about when I fell on cement stairs. I slipped on the ice and I fell between my C3 and C4. And I heard the EMT say, if we move her wrong, one or two things is going to happen. She's either going to expire or she's going to be a quadriplegic. So we need to be very strategic about how we do this. And knowing that I had six people that wanted me to survive, I didn't even take pain medication. For the entire time, I just cracked jokes. That was my coping mechanism from the time they picked me up until the time they put me in the hospital hallway. And it was okay. It was okay to have those kind of relationships and remember, hey, I built these relationships with men I didn't know, not because I was flirting, but because I knew that they had my best interests at heart. And that's what we have to remember. And then on the end of that, I'm, as I said, a waiting officiant, and I travel all over. Wherever you call me, that's where I'm going to be. The business is superiorloveforever@gmail.com. So the people can reach me if they want to, or they can just go to www.superiorloveforever.com. And I just released an anthology with 14 of the greatest women I know. And it was led by a visionary, Dr. Marcia B. Whitaker. And she is not only a medical doctor, but she's also a visionary about this anthology. She brought us all together, rewrote our stories. Each of us have our stories in this anthology. And it is on Barnes & Noble, like I said earlier. And it went from 176,000, that's where we were ranked, to 38, and then it popped up to 16. So with Barnes & Noble, the top 100 books are bestsellers. It is an award-winning book already, and we've already been seen on CEO Weekly, Fox 45, and ABC. So we've been seen already, we've been noticed already, and it's a great thing that we do what we do, because every story has an impact on how you can go from I'm here to I'm here, and I have that power. I can do this. You have a village, you have a community, and we're all there to say, reach out. You have coaches from all walks of life. You have trainers from all walks of life. You have speakers from all walks of life. Several of us are ministers. There's all these women there that you have all these resources to get where you're trying to go. In the near future, I do have another book coming out. It's a novel. And that's going to either be in December 2024 or January 2025. And then several months after that, about 6 months, I'll be releasing a book for couples called The Couples Coupling, How to Get Through Your Relationship Happily, Really, Ever After. And that will be in June sometime. And my husband and I are also putting on a 3-day retreat that we hope will be every single year. We want to try this 2025. And if it goes off well, every year is going to be in a different location. Because our business is concierge, we want to keep that reputation of everything we do is concierge. Come, join, and we want people to see other places. And the only way you can get people out of their regular routine is put it somewhere else. If you live in Kansas, I'm not going to do it in Kansas. I'm going to do it that's not in Kansas. If you live in Peru, I'm not going to do it in Peru. I'm going to put it somewhere that's not in Peru. Why? Because if you're out seeing the world, you can experience the world and you can grow and you can elevate yourself.
That sounds so awesome. You're doing so much and I'm just amazed by all you're doing and it sounds so great. So I'll put a link to your website and your email in the show notes so that people can find it easily. And then I always like to end the podcast with advice for the next generation. So if you were talking to a young woman who's considering joining the military, what would you say?
Before you join the military, know three things about yourself: who you are, what you really want, and what's your end game. Don't just say it to yourself. Don't say it to anyone else. Keep it to yourself, but don't just say it to yourself. Make a vision board. Make it visual. In the Bible, God says, write it out and make it plain. So here's how you do that. You make a vision board. I want to join the whatever military. I want to be here this much time. After that, what do I want to do? What is it that's my plan? And while I'm in the military, how do I want to serve? And who do I want to serve? Not just the military, but every community that you're in, serve there. You're not just there to take, give back. For me, every place I went, I tried to do something that involved cancer because my mother passed away from cancer. Like this, it's 2 weeks from now, I'll be in my community involved in a 5K for cancer. And I continue to do that because I recognize that I myself, my husband, have both suffered through that, and we made it. We're here. And so to dream on to help other people. But I also support St. Joseph's because I recognize that my youngest grandson is autistic, but my daughter has had some medical issues as well. And I think that knowing that those issues exist for everybody, everybody's child, everybody's mom, everybody's dad, support something. Because when you support nothing, no one supports you.
Such good advice. I love the vision board and like coming up with a plan and writing it down, because I think, like you said, you wanted to go to Hickam. You told people that's where you wanted to go, and it happened. And it's just, it's amazing that when you write something down, when you give yourself like a purpose and a place to go, you're able to do it. So I think that's such great advice. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast, for sharing your story, and for all that you're doing for, you know, just not just the military community, but the community at large. It's really amazing to hear.
And it was my pleasure to be here. I will say this, for anyone who's out there, who's ever been in the military, who is currently in the military, who wants to go into the military, thank you. Thank you for everything that you've done, you're doing, and you continue to do. This country and our people around the world, not just here, we love you, we need you, and we are thankful for you.
I love that. Thank you.